Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and features is designed for English learners. So we speak a little slowly, using simple sentences and a limited vocabulary. On the show today, we hear part of a podcast from the American Academy of Achievement. We close the show, as always, with an American story. Later, Brian Lynn tells about an unusual item for sale from inventor Elon Musk. But first, it is time for some news about football, American style. Every year, more Americans gather around their televisions to watch the Super Bowl than any other single broadcast. Last year, almost 112 million viewers watched the New England Patriots defeat the Atlanta Falcons for the National Football League Championship. It was the fifth Super Bowl win for the Patriots. This Sunday, the Patriots will go for another. They will face the Philadelphia Eagles in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Eagles have never won a Super Bowl, the championship game established in 1967. Fans and experts consider the Eagles the underdog in the big game, meaning the team is widely expected to lose. The lack of confidence in the Eagles is partly the result of Tom Brady's great record. The Patriots quarterback has led his team to 5 Super Bowl wins. He was named Most Valuable Player in 3 of those championship games. Last year, Brady helped his team recover from a 25-point deficit and win the game. Many consider him the best quarterback of all time. Nick Foles is the quarterback for the Eagles. Foles had a poor 2015 season with the St. Louis Rams and thought about retiring from the game. Last year, he joined the Eagles as a backup quarterback. When starting quarterback Carson Wentz injured his knee, Foles took his place. The Eagles, under Foles, however, seemed to enjoy being the underdog. After defeating the heavily favored Atlanta Falcons 15-10 in a playoff game, 2 Eagles players walked off the field wearing dog masks. One of them jokingly told reporters, "I don't know if you heard. There was a little narrative this week that the media was pushing that evidently we were, like, not favored." The team then encouraged its fans to wear dog masks themselves to the next game. The underdog Eagles went on to beat the Minnesota Vikings by a score of 38-7. That win earned the Eagles its place in Super Bowl 52. The Super Bowl broadcast is not only about the game, however. Many who watch are more interested in the halftime entertainment and the funny commercials aired during the game. Singer Justin Timberlake is the star performer this year. It will be his third time on the Super Bowl stage. The Philadelphia Eagles and New England Patriots have faced each other once before in a Super Bowl. The Patriots won that 2005 NFL Championship game 24-21. Only one person who played then will return to the field this Sunday: New England Patriot Tom Brady. The Eagles are hoping for a different result this time.
Elon Musk, head of electric car maker Tesla and aerospace company SpaceX, is known for using creative methods to raise money for his businesses. He has successfully gotten tens of thousands of interested buyers to place deposits of at least $1,000 for electric Tesla vehicles that were not yet manufactured. Last year, SpaceX announced that two private citizens had paid a significant deposit to ride on one of the company's rockets for a future trip around the moon. So it is not surprising that Musk recently launched another money raiser, this time for his tunnel-digging business, The Boring Company. But what did surprise many people was the item he was selling: flamethrowers. The Boring Company's website began offering the fire shooters for $500 each on January 27th. Days later, Musk announced on Twitter that all 20,000 flamethrowers offered had been sold. This means the pre-sale process brought in $10 million. The company said the devices, which look similar to some air guns sold as toys, would ship sometime this spring. The flamethrower campaign followed another Boring Company fundraiser that sold 50,000 hats that showed the company's name on the front. Musk shared on Christmas Eve that since the hats had sold out, flamethrowers would next go up for sale. But many people wondered if the new campaign announcement could be a joke. About a month later, the technology executive announced the official launch, but in a joking way. The Boring Company flamethrower, guaranteed to liven up any party, he tweeted. Musk also joked that the device would be great for roasting nuts. He also suggested, when the zombie apocalypse happens, you'll be glad you bought a flamethrower. Works against hordes of the undead or your money back. At one point, he even tweeted that owning a flamethrower was a terrible idea, urging people not to buy one. But he quickly followed up that comment with, "Unless you like fun." But the jokes and fact that the item was highly unusual did not stop people from buying up flamethrowers by the thousands. Some people, and at least one California lawmaker, raised concerns about the safety of the flamethrowers. Musk responded by stating that federal rules allow the use of any flamethrower with a flame shorter than 3 meters. He said they were designed to provide the most fun with the least danger. "I'd be way more scared of a steak knife," he said. As a safety feature, the company says all flamethrowers will also ship with a free fire extinguisher. The Boring Company's goal is to create underground tunnels to be used as a new form of high-speed transportation. One of the proposed uses would be with Musk's planned transportation system, Hyperloop. Currently under development, this system would operate with electromagnetic technology and forced air. Musk has said Hyperloop would use electric vehicles to carry between 8 to 16 passengers between major U.S. cities at speeds up to 1,000 kilometers an hour. The Boring Company is developing equipment intended to make the process of drilling tunnels faster and more cost-effective. I'm Brian Lynn.
Next up is Alice Winkler with part of another What It Takes podcast. Today, the show centers on legendary Hollywood actor Olivia de Havilland.
When people talk about Hollywood's golden age, they're usually referring to that period between about 1930 and 1959, when the studios ruled, glamour was the order of the day, and people on screen talked like this.
I know now why you tried so hard to kill this outlaw whom you despised. It's because he was the one man in England who protected the helpless against a lot of beasts who were drunk on human blood. And now you intend to murder your own brother.
You'll be sorry you interfered.
Sorry? I'd do it again if you killed me for it.
He must take me away. He must love me.
Catherine, you must take hold of yourself.
No, no, Morris must take hold of me. Morris will love me.
We thought it best not to tell you, Scarlett, but Ashley and Frank and the others have gone to clean out those woods where you were attacked. It's what a great many of our southern gentlemen have had to do lately for our protection.
That was The Adventures of Robin Hood, followed by The Heiress and, of course, Gone with the Wind. They all starred Olivia de Havilland. This episode of What It Takes from the Academy of Achievement is devoted to her life and career. Olivia de Havilland was 18 when she starred in her first movie. We'll talk about how she got there in a moment and how she came to change Hollywood forever. But first, take a listen to her voice, recorded when she was a mere 90.
You know, thrust into my profession without any training whatsoever, I had to just flounder, just find my way. It was an agonizing experience. It's like jumping off a diving board in the Olympic contest without knowing how to swim or dive. And I just had to find my way. So one day, I said to Jimmy Cagney, "Jimmy, what is acting?" And he said, "I don't know." He said, "All I can tell you is, whatever you say, mean it." And I thought that marvelous counsel.
Ms. de Havilland sat down to record this interview with the Academy of Achievement in 2006. She spoke for 3 hours and seemed to remember every name, every story, and every detail from her life in the movies, as if she'd just walked off the set. And even though she's lived in Paris for the past 50 years, pretty much out of the limelight, she tells a tale with all the flourish you'd hope for. For instance, when interviewer Gail Eichenthal started off by asking her how she came to be born in Japan in 1916, this is how she responded.
People ask me that question, and of course the natural reply is, well, my parents were there at the time. But of course there's more to the story than that.
Olivia de Havilland's parents were both British, and they met in Tokyo. Her father was a Cambridge graduate who was there teaching in the Anglican community. Her mother had a degree in music and went to teach choral singing.
She received a letter from her brother saying, I have a post for you to come out to Japan. And at the age of 21, my mother set sail for Japan, unchaperoned. And I said to her in the last days of her life, I said, Mother, do you mean to tell me that you went out to Japan in 1907 at the age of 21 without a chaperone? And she said, I was in charge of the captain. I said, Mother, you were in charge of the captain? And she said, he went mad in the Malay Straits. I said, Mother, were you the cause? And she replied, there were some who said so. That was my mother.
To hear the whole podcast, go to the What It Takes section on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Now it's time for an American story. Today, we hear the fourth and final part of Edgar Rice Burroughs' work, A Princess of Mars. Here is Shep O'Neill.
The huge green warrior Tars Tarkas came slowly toward me with his thin sword. I backed away. I did not want to fight him. I did not wish his death. He had been as kind to me as a green Martian can be. As I stood watching him, a rifle fired in the distance. Then another and another. Tars Tarkas and his warriors were under attack from another tribe of green warriors. Within seconds, a terrible battle raged. As I watched, three of the attackers fell on Tars Tarkas. He killed one and was fighting with the other two when he slipped and fell. I ran to his aid, swinging my sword. He was on his feet. Shoulder to shoulder, we fought against the attackers. They finally withdrew after an hour of fierce fighting.
John Carter, I think I understand the meaning of the word friend. You saved my life when I was about to take yours. From this day, you are no longer a captive among our people, but a leader and great warrior among us.
There was a smile on his face. Once again, he took off a metal band from his arm and gave it to me.
I have a question for you, John Carter. I understand why you took the Red Woman with you. But why did Sola leave her people and go with you?
She did not want to see me or the princess harmed. She does not like the great games held by your people where captives are led to die. She knows if she is caught, she too will die in the games. She told me she hates the games because her mother died there.
What? How could she know her mother?
She told me her mother was killed in the games because she had hidden the egg that produced her. Her mother hid Sola among other children before she was captured. Sola said she was a kind woman, not like others of your tribe. Tars Tarkas grew angry as I was speaking, but I could see past his anger. I could see pain in his eyes. I immediately knew Sola's great secret. I have a question for you, Tars Tarkas. Did you know Sola's mother?
Yes, and if I could have, I would have prevented her death. I know this story to be true. I have always known the woman who died in those games had a child. I never knew the child. I do now. Sola is also my child.
For 3 days, we followed the trail left by the Princess Deja Torres, Sola, and poor, ugly Wula. At last, we could see them in the distance. Their animal could no longer be ridden. They were talking. When we came near, Wula turned to fight us. I slowly walked to him with my hand out. Sola was standing nearby. She was armed and prepared to fight. The princess was lying next to her feet. Sola, what is wrong with the princess?
She has been crying much these past few days, John Carter. We believed you died so we could escape. The thought of your death was very heavy on this woman, my friend Deja Thoris. Come and tell her you are among the living. Perhaps that will stop her crying.
I walked to where the Princess Deja Thoris was lying on the ground. She looked at me with eyes that were red from crying. Princess, you are no longer in danger. Tars Tarkas has come with me as a friend. He and his warriors will help to see you safely home. And Sola, I would have you greet your father, Tars Tarkas, a great leader among your people. Your secret no longer means death to anyone. He already knows you are his daughter. The two of you have nothing to fear. Sola turned and looked at Tars Tarkas. She held out her hand. He took it. It was a new beginning for them.
I know our world has never before seen anyone like you, John Carter. Can it be that all Earthmen are like you? I was alone, a stranger, hunted, threatened. Yet you would freely give your life to save me. You come to me now with a tribe of green warriors who offer their friendship. You are no longer a captive, but wear the medal of great rank among their people. No man has ever done this.
Princess, I have done many strange things in my life, many things much smarter men would not have done. And now, before my courage fails, I would ask you to be mine in marriage. She smiled at me for a moment, and then her dark eyes flashed in the evening light.
You have no need of your courage, John Carter, because you already knew the answer before you asked the question.
Several days later, we reached the city of Helium. At first, the red men of Helium thought we were an attacking army. But they soon saw their princess. We were greeted with great joy. Tars Tarkas and his green warriors caused the greatest excitement. This huge group of green warriors entered the city as friends and allies. I soon met Tardos Mors, the grandfather of Deja Thoris. He tried several times to thank me for saving the life of the princess, but tears filled his eyes, and he could not speak. For 9 years, I served in the government and fought in the armies of Helium as a prince of the royal family. It was a happy time. The Princess Deja Thoris and I were expecting a child. Then, one day, a soldier returned from a long flight. When he landed, he hurried to the great meeting room. Tardos Mors met with the soldier and reported that every creature on the planet had but 3 days to live. He said the great machines that produced the atmosphere on the planet had stopped producing oxygen. He said no one knew why this had happened, but there was nothing that could be done. The air grew thin within a day. Many people could do nothing but sleep. I watched as my princess was slowly dying. I had to try something. I could still move with great difficulty. I went to our airport and chose a fast aircraft. I flew as fast as I could to the building that produced the atmosphere of the planet. Workers were trying to enter. I tried to help. With a great effort, I opened a hole. I grew very weak. I asked one of the workers if he could start the engines. He said he would try. I fell asleep on the ground. It was dark when I opened my eyes again. My clothing felt stiff and strange. I sat up. I could see light from an opening. I walked outside. The land looked strange to me. I looked up to the sky and saw the red planet Mars. I was once again on Earth in the desert of Arizona. I cried out with deep emotion. Did the worker reach the machines to renew the atmosphere? Did the air reach the people of that planet in time to save them? Was my Princess Deja Thoris alive, or did she lie cold in death? For 10 years now, I have watched the night sky looking for an answer. I believe she and our child are waiting there for me. Something tells me that I shall soon know.
That was Shep O'Neill with A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs. We have come to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.